in a body. And that's the first aggregate, rupa dana kanda. Rupa means form, body, corporeal. You need a body. So that's the first requisite to start to engage in sensual delight. Okay? That's the first thing that gets in the way. Another mental faculty that plays is known as vetana nakanda. Vetana means feelings, mental and physical feelings that are pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And the mind loves pleasant things. We really spend a lot of time indulging, chasing, and engaging in that. Huh? And you're getting and we spend an equal amount of time, approximately, more or less, avoiding that which is unpleasant, or that which we deem to be unpleasant. Okay, and you guys, you've had it, you understand. You wiggle and jiggle when pain comes. You fawn and go gaga when there's floating sensations, tinglings in the body, clarity. Ooh, I love this. Bring it on. Pain, bugger off. This is a microcosm of your life right here. Very obvious, very evident. It plays in your life. It plays. Nothing, everything that happens here happens out there, except you're moving quicker and you got more assuagements to hide it. You got all sorts of stuff to hide it, cover it up, run from it, you know, avoid it. Okay? And it is the key to life then. It's one of the perceived keys to life. How much pleasure can you have? And, you know, we're all, you guys are prosperous. You're in the top 5% of the wealth of the world. You know, you really are. And you know, relative to the wealthy ones in your community, you're not. But it doesn't matter. You know, you're wealthy compared to 95% of the people in the world. So you get to indulge things. You know, you get to have your favorite indulgences, foods and whatever. You can do whatever you want. You have the money to do it, you have the time to do it, and you can just do it. And you do it. So, prosperity has a foundation that can be really, you know, in prosperity can be a trap for fools, because if you're flying around the world first class on a platinum card, it's pretty hard to understand the first noble truth, because everyone is there to take care of you. On the other hand, with wealth, you can do some wonderfully meritorious things, like support your own practice. Take the time off here. Come and learn about your mind. Or support others. You know, we get donations here which make this place possible. Wealthy people donate money to this place to keep it going, so people like you can come and do what you're doing. Free yourself from your mind's silliness. That's what you're here for. That's what we're here for. So, the third is known as sanya nakanda, and this is the mind that leads to attachment. This is the type of mind that brings you to the place where that's what I want. I need that. Okay, that's the mind that sets you up for clinging, for craving. Then you have sankhara nakanda, which is a faculty of the mind that moves you to execute the action, wholesome or unwholesome actions, to fulfill what you perceive is a pleasant experience, or to do something that is unwholesome because you think it's beneficial to you or others, because your mind is clouded enough to believe that, or to engage in some wholesome activity, either accidentally or deliberately. Then you have Vijñānakhanda, which is sort of the aggregate of all thoughts and impressions. It's the probably the pool from which memory arises. You know, as Mark Twain said, a lot of trouble in my life, not much of it has happened. This is an evident of when you're tapping into a Vijñānakhanda that is creating images that you believe to be real. Okay? And you've done it. Every one of you in this room has done this here. Some to more extreme cases than others. You know. And really, Panyawaro's got a really interesting description of this and how the khandas play. It's called silly suffering, stupid suffering, unnecessary suffering. The mind creates unnecessary suffering in its stupid craving to fulfill these desires. It creates stories to justify everything that causes suffering. I call it favorite poisons we love to take. Familiar unwholesome actions, familiar neuroses, familiar stories that we will cling to and defend to whatever end it takes. Even in front of a monk, we will defend that this mind is right. This is fine. This is the way I am. I'm not a morning person. No, I'm a really fast moving. I'm busy. I'm a fast moving go and get. I'm a gunner. Don't you dare try to mess with that, Bhante. Because I cling to this, and this is me, and I'm proud of it. See the story? And you got a storyline. It's charged. Whoo, yeah, all right. And you might have even been making money doing this back in Samsaraville. You know, they might be paying you to be this way. So you're being reinforced like a rat in a cage. Go to the little sweet bowl. Prove that you're a type A personality and we'll give you some honey. Okay. It's called money or honey. Money, honey, honey, money. You see, so we get reinforced and therefore we believe. Now there's the difference between being nutty about this and just being prudent and focused and discerning. But all of these mind states are quite unnecessary when you put it in perspective of vipassana. Because vipassana is the intelligent delivery of service. This is where you get to look and see things as they really are. This is where the mind wakes up and sees itself and sees the processes that are feeding this false belief in self, this story, this favorite poison. Good example of this is, well, I'll give you a couple. In Hawaii, anywhere actually, but especially Hawaii where I've seen it, some small-time fishermen hunt for octopi. And they have a simple way of getting these expensive mollusks. Are they mollusks? Is that a good word? Mollusks, okay. You can make a lot of money. I mean, they're almost as valuable as gold now. But what you do is you go down, what they do, they just have a snorkel and a mask. Go down, find the octopus, put it on its back, on the fisherman's back. That's what they do. And they get two or three, and the octopus hang on for dear life. Think about that. They hang on for dear life. They think they're hanging on for dear life, but in fact they're hanging on for dear death. Because when the fisherman gets to the beach, he disentangles himself from the octopus and turns it into calamari very quickly. So you see the analogy. All the octopus has to do to live another day, a number more days, is simply let go. There's nothing holding him. The fisherman doesn't have him in a net or a bag, just on the back, clinging to that which will kill you, clinging to that which will cause serious suffering, clinging to it. Our favorite poison, our silly suffering, our stupid suffering, as Venerable Punyawero calls it, unnecessary suffering. Very convincing suffering, but unnecessary. Another good example, back once upon a time, monkey meat used to be very popular as a sort of a delicacy, actually. Monkeys were hard to catch because they were way up in the trees, and you know, you had to be really good with your arrow and you wouldn't necessarily hit them. So they devised a plan, because monkeys like bananas. And they had, what they used to do is put bananas in a cage. And the only way to get access to this was through a little coconut husk that was shaped like this, with a slit in it, into which the monkey could reach an open hand, grab a banana, but couldn't get it out. The closed fist could not pull out of the coconut shell. And of course, the coconut shell is stronger than a monkey. And, you know, the hunters used to come and laugh about how silly these greedy monkeys were, because they'd be hanging on to their banana. All they had to do was let go and go. But no, they ended up being clubbed to death by the wild. Well, of course. That's,
I really want to go to the end of that story, though.
Well, I'm sorry. It's the way it is. It's what happens when you cling to bananas. And you're doing it metaphorically. Let go of the banana. And you don't have to hear the end of the story. Okay? You can't just let go. You've got to become disenchanted with the banana. You know, like letting go is a New Age myth. Oh, I'll just let go of that. I don't do that anymore. I'm above anger. No. So you can't let go. That's not a possible thing. You can kind of let go, but really what you've done is you just kind of let go to show off. See, I let go of that, but I really want it back. So letting go in the classic and thorough sense of the word, the spiritual sense of the word, is to see something in its true nature. So you become disenchanted enough that you're not attracted anymore to your favorite poison. You see what it does to you, and you finally say, pardon my language, sod that, I'm not going to do it anymore. I've had enough. I'm tired of that. So this is what this practice does for you. It allows you to first of all, meet yourself, meet the favorite poisons that are, you know, toxically, noxiously affecting your life. Experience them. The tightness in the chest. Delightful. I love the way my greed and fear make me feel. I love the limit of doubt. Ooh, it's so nice. Right? You get to feel it and understand it viscerally. And then you get to see also that it disappears when you apply this magic stuff called sati, mindfulness, coupled with good effort. Poof! Oh, wow. Whoo, I'm floating. Whoo, wow. I like this. And if you're not careful, you get attached to that. But you become disenchanted. And that's how letting go happens. It isn't just something you read in a New Age book and give up. You know, you've got to become disenchanted with things before you understand that they're not worth keeping around. Also, this is a place where you learn some of the strengths you have. You actually get to see that you can be patient, that you are resilient, that you've got skills, that you're actually, you know, learning a new skill at your advanced ages. You know, you're doing, it's an empowering practice too. Because it deals with the nub of the issue, which is the mind. The mind is the forerunner of all things. The mind is the forerunner of all things. And it behooves you to do some work with this mind, which has created endless stories. And it trucks them out in front of us. Okay, and still some of us still want to believe, you know, well, I see, but I still like it. You know, I've had enough. I can't do this. And you know, then you start making, many of you have thought of leaving this place. Surprise. But you see, the mind will take you to the place where it says, no, I really want to stay on the fisherman's back. I like the banana. I'm keeping the banana. You can take me home now. I want this banana. And you're being trained on how to become disenchanted with bananas and fishermen's backs so that you can continue to live authentically. But the mind can create stories that will just fish you right out of here. The paradox of it. The very thing that'll save you, you run from. The very thing that will kill you, you cling to. And I use kill sort of metaphorically. Damage you, suffer you, maybe kill you. Spiritually disable you, for sure. That's what you're doing here. Now, the cause of suffering is known as tanha. Okay, samudaya saccha, the truth of the cause. Tanha means craving. Tanha means craving. It's closely related to clinging. The monkey craves the banana and then clings to it. Okay? The octopus craves the security of having every tentacle attached to something, so it clings to that, which will ultimately be its demise. So the craving is the mental state that is the cause of every bit of suffering you'll ever endure. Okay, and of course, its obverse is aversion, craving / aversion. That's it. Once you get that, you're on your way. Any suffering you have is due to these two processes. Think about it. Think about the suffering. Okay. Even the pain of illness is caused by aversion. You know, if you're really present, illness is, you know, pain. Let's use pain here because that's a good one. Pain is just heat, pressure, or vibration. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Maybe intense heat, pressure, or vibration. But as long as the mind's in there saying, I hate this, could we please get up? I'm afraid you'll never walk again. Ha, 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 get up. Or I'm angry because, you know, we were having so much fun before this. Let's get up and go walking in the nice grass. As long as you got a mind like that, you're suffering. And you get to see this over and over and over and over again in lots of different ways. Oh, I had a wonderful sit. It was floating and wonderful and la la la. All of a sudden, next thing, I had a crappy because it wasn't floating and wonderful. It's the mind. That's the key to this whole issue. And this is a very elegant way of getting to the sort of the inner workings to a certain extent of this mind. It creates all sorts of stuff that you believe. That's why I say, no thought worth thinking, no thought worth believing. Here. Later we'll talk about how to incorporate the mind in the daily life in its rightful place. So, craving comes in three flavors. Kamatana, which means it's just simply the craving for sensual delight. The love of Granny's cookies and her ice cream. The enjoyment of sex and orgasm. The enjoyment of caresses. The enjoyment of smells of jasmine. The enjoyment of Brian's food. The enjoyment of
new cars.
And the flash that goes with it, and the looks of people, and the admiration that comes, and the manliness that comes, or the evident success that you must be enjoying and flaunting by driving a new car. All sorts of the above. All sensual delights. And that's fine. Now, there's nothing wrong with enjoying stuff. But where you get into it is when the mind starts to cling to it. And it creates one of the three general sufferings I talked about. The suffering of aversion or attachment to pleasant. Dukkha-dukkha, the suffering of desiring to keep the happy times rolling when they're going to end. And the disappointment therefrom. And then the endlessness of seeking and running from and seeking and running from and seeking and running. You see, that it's the mind that makes all these forms and appearances so full of suffering. That's what does it. Because there's nothing wrong with a good cookie and ice cream snack. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with this chocolate cake and pudding. Okay, there's nothing wrong with it, and it's okay to enjoy it and be with it and feel it and see it in its true nature and then move on to the next event. That's the training we're engaging here, so that you can authentically be with something with no invoices or outstanding requirements to be fulfilled for future happiness. We're just moment to moment in the moment. Seeing what happens, seeing what comes, come what may, so be it. Even dealing with the difficult times, there with it, there with it. Bhavanatana, the third, the craving for existence. Okay, when people are under this illusion or this false understanding, may accept the impermanence of a body and mind process, but they believe there's something permanent that endlessly reincarnates until something magical happens. Don't know. So they seek to continue lives in a pleasant sense, in a pleasant way. They seek to do wonderful things with the sort of the hope that this meritorious deed will lead to a rebirth in a happy realm next time. They give generously so they can accumulate merit. Okay? Or they do it so they can, get instant merit, a picture on the paper or adulation or, adoration of people or their name on the building at a university. They do this. Bhavatana. So they think, they understand the karma of life is based on wholesome action leads to wholesome events. But they pervert it in that there's a condition to their generosity. I want something from this generosity. I want recognition. I want a favorable rebirth. I want a condo downtown Sydney by the waterfront, paid for. That's what I want. in my next life. Or I want to own a block in the middle of Bangkok, Sukhumvit Road, so I can be comfortable forever by offering monks food or doing some generous activity. So it probably will have beneficial effects, but because the motivation is actually rendered from a point of greed, the offering is rendered from a point of greed, it's ultimately going to spiral out and flatten out into what it really is, which is a quid pro quo kind of dhamma, a this for that kind of dhamma, which ultimately fails in the end. Now, the other tana is known as vibhava tana, which is means it's sort of a nihilationism, a nihilism, a belief that there's nothing thereafter, that this life is it, your worm food after you die. That's it. Now, the problem with that false view is it can do this, and perhaps often does. People who have this view really disregard the laws of cause and effect. They think the game is to accumulate something. Pleasure, toys, wealth, lovers, parties, whatever. Merits, accolades. And whoever accumulates the most at the end of life has won the game. Now, you know, they will often cut corners and do things that are very unwholesome to fulfill what they perceive as their only shot at heaven. Heaven involves indulging the pleasure, the senses, because there is nothing thereafter, nothing after. There's no hereafter. There's no place to go. So, you know, ride the wave while you can. Enjoy what you can. And of course, the shock to them, if you buy into the Buddhist cosmology of rebirth, is that they probably are going to be very surprised when they wake up in another lifetime, rebirth in another lifetime, with the shackles of their previous stupidity following them. Okay. So even this form of you know, sort of trans-life kind of attachment can be melted down to the daily life. You know, people who don't understand the law of cause and effect can be reckless in their lives, shameless in their thoughts, creating unwholesome stuff because really it's just about me. Self-absorbed, we might call them. The people who are into looking good are inauthentic. They're just posing so that they'll receive, you know, short-term merit. They're inauthentic. They're doing things just to look good. And of course, many of us humans, all of us say, really enjoy kamatanda, the sensual delights. And of course, when you're born in a place like Australia, they almost become taken for granted, don't they? Okay. And again, the problem, I'm not a doom and gloomer. I believe in authentically living. But you've got to understand what that means. That means being present to all that occurs so the mind doesn't get tricked into this clinging to the banana, this taking a repetitious ingestion of our favorite poisons. You know, this constant chaotic life in the mind that never really happens out here. That's the downside to this. The upside is, you know, being in the moment, living in a state of contentment rather than a state of thrill-seeking or pain aversion. Just content, equanimous is a way. Developing a mind that doesn't believe it's particularly special, but is prepared to be particularly discerning and particularly critical in its thinking. and focused and therefore is special, but doesn't see it as special. It's just natural, it's authentic, it's genuine. It's only the weak mind that likes to think it's special, and it creates all these stories to buffer the belief it's special. Powers and abilities and special things, and, you know, pride oozing from every, mendacity hanging from the walls, you know, just absolute deception causes so much suffering. And again, the good news is once you start to come out of this cloud, wow, life in the moment is so rich. And that's what we're training the mind to do here. To be continued. Tomorrow I'll talk about the path. What the Buddha suggested. The suggested courses of action. 8 of them. To be cultivated. To be developed. And I'll discuss the results of that mature cultivation and what it looks like to a certain extent, as semantically, as limited as the semantic is, the semantics of language. So don't go away, stay tuned. But stay tuned to your present moments until it's time to stay tuned tomorrow's Dhamma talk. Okay? That's what you're here for. Stay tuned. That says it all, doesn't it? Stay tuned. The discipline of this practice is simple. Understand, make a commitment to come to the retreat. Do the practice. That's the discipline. Do the practice as instructed to the best of your ability. And then just be present to all that occurs. That's it. That's the general discipline of a yogi. Just do the practice and be present. Nothing more, nothing less. Nodding all around. So simple. What gets in the way? Well, we just had a long talk about what gets in the way. Now that you know what's really going on, you can continue in your quest for present authenticity. The sweetness of being authentic, focused, as a foundation for spiritual growth. It's not the final goal. It's merely a very good foundation from which you can proceed accordingly. Unfortunately, you're still alive to do that. My brother has a very interesting saying. He's got AIDS, HIV, positive. He's a miracle. He should have died 20 years ago, but he's still alive. And I said, how do you, I don't know what it's like to be with a potentially more fatal disease, except I have one. It's called a human body, but I just, like, you're much closer because you could die anytime. I said, what do you do? And he said, when I wake up in the morning, if I'm alive, I proceed accordingly. You guys are alive. Proceed accordingly, okay, with a mindful state. So, may all of you rightly understand, rightly realize the truth of the of suffering, the truth of the dukkha satcha. May you work diligently to develop the path of magga satcha, to uproot the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering. And may this uprooting and development lead you to the cessation of suffering, the experience of Nirodha Satcha, freedom from all suffering, freedom from the travails of human suffering. And may this be true for each and every one of you. That's a sadhu, please.